Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, November 30th, 2020. Coming up this hour,
the White House Coronavirus Task Force pushes a speedy timeline for a vaccine rollout.
President-elect Joe Biden makes selections for his economic team.
S&P Global nears a major financial data deal worth more than $40 billion.
New York Mayor Bill de Blasio says city schools will begin reopening. Plus, President Trump continues to push unproven claims of voter fraud. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Giants held on in Cincinnati, won their third game in a row. The Jets are still winless. They lost at home to Miami.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
And good Monday morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm John Tucker. Bloomberg Daybreak is being brought to you by Interactive Brokers Stock Yield Enhancement Program. Earn extra income on the fully paid shares of stock in your brokerage account. Open an Interactive Brokers account today and learn more at ibkr.com/SYEP.
And we're seeing mixed price action for U.S. futures as we start the new week. It is 6:01 on Wall Street. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 13 points. Dow futures lower by 157. NASDAQ futures on the rise now, but just barely up by 5 points. 10-year Treasury down 2/32, yield 0.84%. And the yield on a 2-year note is at 0.15%. John?
And Nathan, we begin with a push to get a COVID vaccine to market. Members of the White House Coronavirus Task Force say shots should start rolling out before the end of December, with the offering from Pfizer and BioNTech likely the first to gain approval. That's according to Surgeon General Jerome Adams. He was on Fox News Sunday, heard right here on Bloomberg Radio.
Within 24 to 48 hours after submitting their EUA, we, from a federal perspective, have promised and have set everything up so that we can quickly review those EUAs and hopefully start sending out vaccines, again, within 24 to 48 hours.
Regulators are expected to review Pfizer's application for emergency use December 10th. Dr. Anthony Fauci says the light at the end of the tunnel is getting closer. He was on NBC's Meet the Press, also heard on Bloomberg Radio.
We will really be seeing vaccines soon. We likely, almost certainly, are going to be vaccinating a portion of the individuals in the first priority before the end of December.
Surgeon General Jerome Adams expects 40 million doses to be ready by year's end and says most Americans will have access to a vaccine in the spring.
Meantime, cases continue to rise across the country. California is seeing a troubling surge in key indicators for the seriousness of infections. Ed Baxter has details from our Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
Cases on the 14-day average are at a record, over 15,000 a day. Total infections in the state are at almost 1.2 million. Test positivity reached 6.1%, the highest since the end of August. More than 7,400 people are hospitalized for COVID-19 in California. It is the state's highest number yet. Counties statewide are preparing for stricter COVID-19 restrictions that will take effect today amid surging cases and Thanksgiving travel. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thanks, Ed. And we're seeing similar trends on the East Coast. In New York, infections and hospitalizations are both rising, but even so, it looks like city schools could be shifting back to classroom learning. We get the latest from Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
New York reported more than 6,700 new cases, down from a spike to over 8,100 2 days ago, but still at some of the highest levels since May. The state positive test rate is at 4.27%, the highest since late May, with 55 new deaths. New York City's 7-day COVID positivity rate is now at 3.9%. Mayor Bill de Blasio says that city schools will begin a phased reopening starting on December 7th. The city will abandon the 3% positive test rate threshold for COVID-19, de Blasio said earlier, for closing the schools. The reopening would begin with pre-K classes through elementary school. In New York, Michael Barr, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Okay, Michael, thanks. Turning to politics now, Joe Biden is turning attention to the financial fallout from the virus. The president-elect is making picks to build up his economic team this week. Amy Morris reports from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
Sources tell Bloomberg News Neera Tanden from the Center for American Progress is Biden's pick to lead the Office of Management and Budget. Republicans already say she won't be confirmed. Cecilia Rouse of Princeton University would be the first Black American to head the Council of Economic Advisors, which would include Jared Bernstein and Heather Boucher from the Biden campaign. Former BlackRock executives Adewale Adeyemo and Brian Deese will likely be offered Deputy Treasury Secretary and National Economic Council Director, respectively. Biden's picks suggest he is making it a priority to elevate Black and lower-income Americans. The formal announcements are expected tomorrow. In Washington, I'm Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thanks, Amy. And Biden is also announcing a senior communications team composed entirely of women. Jen Psaki will be the face of the administration as the White House press secretary. She was previously director of communications under President Obama. That role will go to Biden's deputy campaign manager, Kate Bedingfield.
In the meantime, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris received the president's daily intelligence brief for the first time today. It is a custom offered to every president-elect since Nixon, often the morning after Election Day. President Trump's refusal to concede delayed the process by nearly a month.
And turning to corporate news now, we have word of a major acquisition of the financial data industry. S&P Global is combining with IHS Markit in a deal valued at $44 billion. We get more on the deal from Bloomberg's Tom Busby.
This tie-up would combine two of Wall Street's biggest data providers and values IHS at a 20% premium. Now, together, the combined company would have a market cap of around $82 billion. The deal will likely draw comparisons to the London Stock Exchange purchase of Refinitiv last year. And in the interest of transparency, we should note that Bloomberg LP, the parent company of Bloomberg Radio, competes with S&P and IHS in the financial analytics and information industry. I'm Tom Busby, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Tom, thanks. In corporate news out of China, Jack Ma's Ant Group is facing a slim chance of getting its IPO done next year. Chinese officials tell Bloomberg Ant is in the early stages of reviewing changes demanded by regulators. Ant's IPO was pulled as China overhauls rules governing the fintech industry. Right now, S&P futures lower by 12 points. Dow futures down 157. NASDAQ futures on the rise now. They are up by 7.5 points. You are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thanks, Nathan. 6:07 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr to find out what else is going on in New York and around the world.
John, thank you very much. About $30 billion in federal funding is needed for COVID vaccine distribution across the country, according to Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. The New York senator says that stalled coronavirus relief funding legislation would fund efforts like mobile vaccination clinics and free vaccine shots in the hardest hit areas.
Today, we are once again urging Leader McConnell to put the HEROES bill on the floor of the Senate. It has passed the House, and it has the money that's needed to distribute the vaccine.
Meanwhile, Congress is returning to Washington for one last attempt at deal-making this year. The only absolute must-do is preventing a government shutdown on December 11th. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo agrees with Mayor Bill de Blasio's plan to reopen schools in New York City. As we mentioned earlier, de Blasio says they will soon do away with a hybrid plan for elementary-age children. Cuomo says findings of the healthcare community back up their decision.
Just about every professional says the schools, especially K through 8, should be kept open.
President Trump acknowledged that the fight to overturn his reelection defeat probably won't reach the Supreme Court. Speaking on Fox News, the president once again repeated unfounded allegations of election fraud. We're learning that a Pennsylvania state senator abruptly left a West Wing meeting with President Trump after being informed that he had tested positive for the coronavirus. According to the Associated Press, Republican State Senator Doug Mastriano was there for a meeting between Trump and like-minded Republican state lawmakers about efforts to overturn Joe Biden's victory in Pennsylvania. Joe Biden will likely wear a walking boot for several weeks after breaking his right foot while playing with one of his dogs. Jared Kushner will travel to Saudi Arabia and Qatar this week in a bid to ease tensions in the region, including the ongoing rift between Qatar and its neighbors. Bloomberg's Simone Foxman has more.
Kushner will bring a delegation that includes a former Iran envoy, Brian Hook, Avi Berkowitz, who's been key to those Israel discussions, as well as Adam Bowler, who heads an investment company called DFC that's part of the government.
Kushner's team hopes to make progress on a three-year rift over allegations from Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Bahrain, and the UAE that Qatar supports terrorism.
Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. Coming up on 610 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg Sports Update. And here's John Stashower.
Thanks, John. The Giants had their first three-game winning streak in the last 4 years. In Cincinnati, they dominated, but as always seems to happen with Big Blue, the game not decided until the end. Costly holding penalty when they appeared to have the game locked up. And the Bengals, who had an early kickoff return for touchdown, had a punt return that nearly got them into position for a game-winning field goal, but the Giants forced a fumble. Cincinnati's third turnover of the day, and the Giants won 19-17. They won with Daniel Jones missing most of the second half. He left with an injured hamstring, briefly came back, then left again. His coach is Joe Judge.
Actually, I talked to him on the sideline in terms of how he was. It was at a point that he couldn't continue in the game, which takes an awful lot. Daniel's a really tough dude. So we'll kind of take a look and see what it is. I don't have much more information than what you guys probably got from the TV at this point right now. He's got to see the doctors and kind of get looked at with some MRIs and different things like that, which is standard procedure. We kind of MRI everything around here.
Colt McCoy replaced Jones. The Jets got Sam Darnold back after he'd missed the last two games. He threw two more interceptions. Jets lost to Miami 20-3. They are 0-11. The Dolphins, who fired Adam Gase as their coach before the Jets decided to hire Gase, they're 7-4. They beat the Jets twice by a combined score of 44-3. It was a bizarre situation in Denver. The Broncos have four quarterbacks and none were allowed to play due to COVID protocol. They used Kendall Hilton, a practice squad receiver who had played QB in college, but he had never stepped on a field in an NFL game before, and he completed one pass all day. The Broncos lost to the Saints 31-3. College basketball, Rutgers already 3-0, 70-56 over Hofstra. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. John.
All right, John, thanks very much. And just ahead, we'll get an update from Johns Hopkins University on the COVID-19 pandemic. Right now, ahead of the cash open on Wall Street, S&P futures, they're 14 points lower. The Dow futures right now down 163 points. And the Nasdaq E-mini futures are up 5 points. You're listening to Daybreak. Daybreak brought to you by Anshin Accountants and Advisors. Complicated times for. Call for proactive advisors who help increase cash flow, minimize taxes, and create long-term strategies for the future of your business. Visit Anshin.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
I'm Nathan Hager. U.S. futures are mixed at the moment, broadly lower for the most part on this last day of the month. Oil is extending a retreat on signs of discord among OPEC Plus ministers. Let's check the markets as we do every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are lower by 12 points. Dow futures down 153. NASDAQ futures on the rise just slightly. They're up 8.5 points. 10-year Treasury down 2/32. The yield 0.84%. Yield on the 2-year 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil is lower, down 1.4%, down 63 cents to $44.90 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.9%, down $15.60 to $17.72.40 an ounce. The euro is at 1.1985 against the dollar. British pound 1.3347, and the yen is at 103.97. More on the news of S&P Global and IHS Market entering into a definitive merger agreement, an all-stock transaction that values IHS Market at $44 billion, including $4.8 billion in net debt. Current S&P Global shareholders would own most of the combined company. In the interest of transparency, we should note Bloomberg LP, parent company of Bloomberg Radio, competes with S&P and IHS in the financial analytics and information industry. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. President-elect Joe Biden is expected in the coming days to name several of his most senior economic advisors. Biden is placing a premium on diversity in his selection of cabinet nominees and key advisors. Two expected to be named are former Fed Chair Janet Yellen as Treasury Secretary and Neera Tanden to head the Office of Management and Budget. Yellen would be the first female Treasury Secretary. Tanden would be the first woman of color and the first South Asian woman to lead the agency that oversees the federal budget. President Trump called into Fox News Sunday for his first interview since losing the election. He repeated unfounded claims of election fraud. In the NFL, the Giants won along with the Patriots, Washington, and the 49ers. The Jets lost. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take,
powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. John.
All right, Michael, thank you. It is now 6:20 on Wall Street. We're live for the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Vaccines are likely to begin rolling out in the U.S. before the end of December. This is according to the Surgeon General Jerome Adams and Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease specialist. Joining us this morning with more in his take, Dr. Amesh Adalji, the professor of Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Does that timeline before the end of the year sound realistic to you?
It does sound realistic, but with one caveat, that these are vaccines not for the general public, but for vaccines for healthcare workers and maybe some high-risk individuals. Because you have to remember that this vaccine is going to be available in batches, and those first batches are going to be prioritized to those groups. So for the general public, we're still looking well into 2021 in the best-case scenario.
Just a sort of tangential to that, there was a report on 60 Minutes. I don't know if you saw it. It was also talking about a poll in which a lot of healthcare workers were somewhat reluctant to take, at least in the initial phases, a vaccine. I found that. Do you find that curious?
It is curious, but to me, it's not completely surprising. We saw a similar sentiment during the 2009 H1N1 pandemic, where healthcare workers were a little bit reticent to take the vaccine. You know, I'm a healthcare worker. I took care of COVID patients over the weekend. I'm somebody who will be first in line if I'm allowed to be first in line. But I know that there are some of my colleagues who have concerns, maybe because of the fact that this is a new vaccine, and the vaccine hesitancy movement has, you know, really made inroads into people's minds and thinking, and they tend to doubt things that are new, and that's likely something that's even reflected in healthcare workers, which is unfortunate because we are some of the hardest hit with this virus, and people that need to be able to kind of be man the barricades to take care of all of these patients that we're having.
We've heard about the parameters that have been set in the studies. Does a vaccine's true efficacy really become established once it's out in the general public?
It does. So when you look at the efficacy in a clinical trial, we know that it's going to fall when you actually put it into the general population, because the general population is very different than trial populations. And we know that not everybody may come back for their second dose. People may get their dates a little bit wrong. There's going to be differences with trying to supply the vaccine based on its storage requirements. All of that's going to bring down the effectiveness. So we often see a step down when you get into effectiveness. So the higher the efficacy, at least we're starting from a very high point. But we don't, you know, you don't expect it to actually reach those trial conditions when you apply it to the general population outside of a randomized controlled trial, which is very heavily watched and a lot of vigilant eyes on how the trial is conducted versus what happens in the general public.
Doctor, do we have a sense of the point at which enough of us have had a shot to halt the spread of COVID-19?
Well, first of all, it's going to be two shots, not one shot. So one shot's not going to be enough. So everybody has, we have to get as many people as we can to get two shots to get the effectiveness of the vaccine to a level that's protective. Probably, if you think about it, you know, ideally you probably want 70 or 80% of the population to get it, but that's probably an overestimate because that assumes that the population is homogenous. Everybody has the same risk of acquiring or spreading the virus, and that's not true. So probably lower than that, we'll start to see benefits. But remember, the vaccine is being targeted primarily at high-risk individuals first. So that's not so much about spread, but much more about keeping them out of the hospital. So that's the first benefit to look for. And if we can get a high enough uptake of the vaccine in populations that are at risk for hospitalization, you'll see pressure lift off of hospitals, and I think that will change the whole risk perception of this virus if it's not something that's landing people in the hospital and then hospitals aren't going into crisis.
Well, many of us, we're celebrating Thanksgiving. We're also giving thanks to healthcare workers like yourself. You were treating patients during the holiday. Can I ask you what the situation is like right now, not just at your hospital, but the sense you get among other healthcare institutions? Are they approaching maximum capacity?
So I practice in the Pittsburgh area, and we're not approaching capacity, but it is the busiest we've ever been during this pandemic, taking care of COVID-19 patients. So you'll see a significant proportion of the hospital occupied by patients who have COVID-19, and that's very different even at the height of the pandemic, at least in the area that I'm in March and April. And we don't really see an end in sight because we know that there's a lot more community spread now than we've ever seen before. And that's a similar state across the country, that this outbreak is uncontrolled in many parts of the country and that hospitals are expecting to get more and more patients.
Doctor, thanks very much for your service. We appreciate it. I'm Ashadology Professor Johns Hopkins, Bloomberg School of Public Health. And you're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Daybreak brought to you by your Tri-State Audi dealers. Add some thrill to your wish list during the Season of Audi sales event at your Tri-State Audi dealer. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991. To Boston. Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco. Bloomberg 960. To the country. Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
We're at 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm John Tucker.
And I'm Nathan Hager. We're just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures mostly lower this morning as coronavirus infections climb across the country. Few regions are being spared, but states in the Midwest with looser restrictions are in greater danger. That's according to former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb. He spoke on Face the Nation from CBS, heard on Bloomberg Radio.
You see what's happening in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic states where governors took more aggressive steps early, where there's more consistent use of masks, where they took less infection going into this season. I think you're going to see infection remain lower than we're seeing in other parts of the country like the Midwest.
Still, those Midwest and North Atlantic states are also seeing infections rise. Daily cases in New York are at the highest level since May. Washington, D.C. just set a single-day record for infections. And in Massachusetts, the positive test rate is the highest since June.
Meantime, the White House Coronavirus Task Force says vaccines should start rolling out before the end of December when regulators review emergency use authorization requests. Surgeon General Jerome Adams was on Fox News Sunday, heard on Bloomberg Radio.
We, from a federal perspective, have promised and have set everything up so that we can quickly review those EUAs and hopefully start sending out vaccines again within 24 to 48 hours.
Adams expects 40 million doses to be ready by year's end and says most Americans will have access to a shot in the spring.
Turning to politics now, Joe Biden is making moves to build up his economic team. Sources tell us the president-elect will nominate Democratic policy staffer Neera Tanden to lead his Office of Management and Budget. We're also told Biden will pick Cecilia Rouse to head the Council of Economic Advisors and former BlackRock advisor Adewale Adeyemo to be Deputy Treasury Secretary.
On the corporate front, there's a major acquisition of the financial data industry. S&P Global is combining with IHS Markit in a deal valued at $44 billion. The tie-up combines two of Wall Street's biggest data providers and values IHS at a 20% premium. In the interest of transparency, we should note that Bloomberg LP, the parent company of Bloomberg Radio, competes with S&P and IHS in the financial analytics and information industry.
And this is Cyber Monday, the busiest online shopping day of the year. U.S. consumers are expected to drop a record-busting $12.7 billion today. That would be more than 30% higher than the prior record. As far as equities go, investors are mostly selling on this final day of the month of November. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are down 14 points, Dow futures down 173, NASDAQ futures higher by 3 points, and the 10-year Treasury gives you a yield of 0.85%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Nathan. 6:33 on Wall Street. This news update being brought to you by Land Rover. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer or call 1-800-FIND-4WD for special offers at the Land Rover Season of Adventure sales event. Now through January 4th, Land Rover above and beyond. Let's bring in Michael Barr now to tell us what else is going on in New York and around the world.
John, thank you very much, sir. Despite a rising virus level in New York City schools, they will begin in-person learning again. Mayor Bill de Blasio says that New York City schools will begin a phased reopening.
Beginning the week of Monday, December 7th, New York City public schools will begin to reopen. We will begin with elementary schools, K to 5, and our pre-K, 3K public school centers.
De Blasio says the city will abandon the 3% positive test rate threshold for COVID-19, he said earlier, for closing the schools. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo agrees with the plan.
We have done testing in schools, and we now know what we're looking at in schools, and the positivity rate is much, much lower.
As for middle and high schools, Mayor de Blasio says the city is not ready yet. The city's seven-day COVID positivity rate is now at 3.9%. Every state in America has an uptick in COVID cases. It comes as many communities still fight to reopen schools for in-person learning. America's top infectious disease specialist, Dr. Anthony Fauci, says America should be following the schools open, bars closed plan.
The best way to ensure the safety of the children in school is to get the community level of spread low.
Fauci spoke on ABC's This Week, which can be heard Sundays on Bloomberg Radio. The number of Republican lawmakers continuing to stand by President Trump continues to dwindle. Senator Roy Blunt says he does not believe the election was rigged. Blunt told CNN's State of the Union that he hopes Trump is forward-looking regarding his future in U.S. politics.
I think there's a big role for President Trump, and I hope he embraces that looks at how you move to whatever comes next for him, assuming that this election works out the way it appears it will.
Meanwhile, President Trump continues to push baseless claims that the election was fraudulent. On Fox News, he's now pointing a finger toward his own administration.
How the FBI and Department of Justice, I don't know, maybe they're involved, but how people are allowed to get away from this with this stuff is unbelievable.
Nearly every lawsuit by the Trump campaign or surrogates alleging fraud has been thrown out of court. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts, more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
All right, Michael, thank you. It is now 6:36 on Wall Street, and it's time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Thanks, John. Don't look now, but the Giants, who won once over the first half of the season, are now in first place, technically tied with Washington, but they beat Washington twice. Philadelphia can move back ahead if the Eagles win tonight, but the Giants have won three in a row. 19-17 in Cincinnati. They scored an early touchdown and then four field goals by Graham Gano, who spent his bye week sick in bed with coronavirus. Gano has made 24 field goals in a row. Wayne Gallman rushed for 94 yards. Evan Engram had 129 receiving, and the defense held the Bengals to only 11 first downs, forced three turnovers. Cincinnati was without its quarterback, rookie Joe Burrow. The Giants lost their QB, Daniel Jones, to a hamstring injury, not knowing how long he'll be out. The Giants are in Seattle this Sunday. The Jets now 0-11. They led Miami 3-0, and then they didn't score again. They lost 20-3. They had only 10 first downs. Sam Darnold returned, threw two interceptions, beaten by Ryan Fitzpatrick, who threw for two touchdowns. The Jets, one of Fitzpatrick's seven former teams. Kansas City is 10-1, 27-24 at Tampa Bay. The Chiefs' Tyreek Hill, 269 yards receiving, three touchdowns. Tom Brady threw two picks. That's seven in Brady's last four games. Buffalo and Tennessee both won. They're both 8-3 and in first place in the AFC. And Cleveland is 8-3, having its best season since 1994. The Browns won by two at Jacksonville. Las Vegas was favored to win in Atlanta and then lost by 37. Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay last night beat Chicago 41-25. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. John.
All right, John, thanks a lot. Well, coming up on the economic front this week, it's all about the labor market. We get the government's monthly jobs report on Friday. And here with more is Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice.
Jobless claims posted the first back-to-back increase since July as new pandemic restrictions forced businesses to cut hours and capacity, and in some cases, shut down. The data suggests November's pace of job growth could moderate after an October gain topping 600,000. Also this week, the ISM issues its monthly factory report, and recent data suggests manufacturing has been providing a solid footing for the economic recovery. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Vinny. Heading overseas now, we have encouraging economic data out of China. The country has managed to avoid a winter resurgence of COVID-19, and that has fueled growth as we see PMI readings for November rise faster than expected. Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis has more from Hong Kong.
The manufacturing PMI rose to 52.1 from 51.4 in October. That was the highest since September of 2017, and it beat estimates. The pickup was driven by strong domestic demand as well as an export boost ahead of Christmas. The non-manufacturing gauge also rose. It was up to 56.4 from October's 56.2, and that was also a beat. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
And turning to corporate news out of China now, Jack Ma's Ant Group is facing a slim chance of getting its IPO done next year. Sources say it's still in the early stages of reviewing necessary changes to appease regulators. Bloomberg's Dave Scanlon has details.
So they don't get this all wrapped up by next October. They've got to apply again, right, in Shanghai and Hong Kong. That just adds to the delay, and that's why there's a concern this could be pushed back into 2022. So those early stage investors, they came in looking to make a windfall from this massive IPO. That is a vindication delay. This is just dead money for them. They're going to have to sit on this for another year or more.
As a result, Bloomberg Intelligence says Ant Group's valuation could drop to $220 billion. That's compared to a $320 billion market cap when the IPO was halted. Back here in the U.S., earnings season winding down, but we still have results from a few key companies this week. Here with more is Bloomberg's Joan Doniger.
Salesforce opens its books tomorrow. The company's conference call will garner attention as analysts seek comment on reports that Salesforce held talks to acquire Slack Technologies. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise also reports tomorrow. Bloomberg Intelligence predicts growth similar to the prior quarter, but notes HPE's outlook for next year remains cloudy. Then on Thursday, we get results from Kroger. Analysts want to see if its investment in online shopping is paying off as more people opt for at-home grocery delivery. Joan Doniger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thanks, Joan. Some of the other stories we're following. HSBC is considering a complete exit from U.S. retail banking. It would be part of a restructuring aimed at boosting profits in the U.S. and Europe. Recommendations are expected to be presented to HSBC's board as soon as this week. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Daybreak, being brought to you by the Jewish Communal Fund. JCF's Donor Advised Fund is the smart choice to manage your philanthropy. Open a JCF fund now to lock in a 2020 tax deduction. Visit jcfny.org.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Global stock markets are on the cusp of finishing a record-breaking month, with the MSCI World Index soaring 13% in November, sparked by major progress toward a coronavirus vaccine. Check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are down 18 points. Dow futures lower by 213 points. NASDAQ futures had been slightly higher. Right now, they are slightly lower, down almost 4 points. 10-year treasuries down 4.30 seconds. The yield 0.85%. Yield on the 2-year 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil down 1.4%, down 62 cents, $44.92 a barrel now. COMEX gold is down 0.7%, or $13 to $17.75.10 an ounce. Euro 1.1990 against the dollar. The yen is at 103.94. Novavax says a large-scale COVID-19 vaccine trial in the U.S. and Mexico will no longer start by the end of this month, but it does expect that study to begin in the coming weeks. The drug maker says a 15,000-volunteer study has completely enrolled. Interim results expected as early as the first quarter of next year. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now with more on what's going on around the world, here's Michael Barr.
Nathan, thank you very much. Congress is returning to Washington for one last attempt at deal-making this year. The only absolute must-do is preventing a government shutdown on December 11th, but lawmakers are also debating whether to deliver another round of coronavirus relief before President Donald Trump leaves office. A virus bill would provide funding for vaccines and testing, for reopening schools, and for helping small businesses. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
Thank God we have some good news that at least three companies, and maybe more, are getting ready to produce a vaccine shortly.
Schumer says about $30 billion is needed in federal funding. The Biden transition team announced an all-women White House communications team, and reports say Biden has selected Brian Deese, a senior Obama administration official and current investment executive, to be his top economic advisor. Funeral services are taking place for Iran's most senior nuclear scientist. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh was assassinated on Friday. Iranians erupted in anger and protests over the killing. Meanwhile, a top Iranian security official says Israel used electronic devices to kill the nuclear scientist. The secretary of the country's Supreme National Security Council made the comment today to Iranian state television at the funeral. Authorities initially said a truck exploded and then gunmen opened fire on the scientist, killing him. In the NFL, the Giants won along with the Patriots, Washington, and the 49ers. The Jets lost. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg, John.
All right, Michael, thank you. It is now 6:50 on Wall Street. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. It's time now to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include the story about Congress confronting deadlines on spending stimulus and Judy Shelton. And President Trump says it's going to be hard for election suits to reach the top court. President-elect Biden picks a single priority in a lift to black low-income workers. And Biden and Harris to receive intelligence briefings starting today. Jared Kushner leading a U.S. delegation to the Middle East. Let's take a deeper dive into these stories this morning with Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter. Yeah, a lot of deadlines coming up, and at least one, as we heard from Michael Barr, is a definite priority. That would be spending.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is pretty typical. There have been a lot of things that have been atypical about this last few weeks when it comes to politics and elections. But one of the typical things that happens is when at the end of the year in Congress, there's sort of this last minute rush to the finish. And there tends to be, a lot of legislation that gets done. However, the dynamics of that this year are shaping up to be especially tricky for a number of reasons. One of them is that we're still not entirely sure what control of the Senate is going to look like in January, and that's because of these two Senate runoffs that we have in Georgia on January 5th, and that those runoffs will determine whether Republicans retain control or not. So that being said, there is this deadline of December 11th to provide additional government funding. I don't think either side wants a shutdown at this stage. That's likely to get done. But then there's also a push for additional stimulus to battle the effects of the coronavirus, and also Trump would love to get his nominee Judy Shelton confirmed to the Fed. Those two items seem to be a much heavier list.
Yeah, the Senate's set to return this afternoon, right? They haven't offered an outline of the full agenda, have they?
No. I mean, there's always a sense of kind of what the playing field, what the universe of potential things looks like, and I think we've already discussed them, basically, when it comes to the big-ticket items. But that being said, I think we'll get some more detail probably when the Senate comes back to the session today.
Okay, and the House doesn't return for votes until the middle of the week. Let's move on to the next story right now. President Trump says it'll be hard for the election lawsuits that we've heard so much about to reach the Supreme Court. Does it sound like some sort of reality is setting in?
Yeah, I think that, that has been the go-to from not just Trump himself, but also his team, in the 4 weeks almost now since the election, is every time they've been dealt some sort of a setback in lower courts to their legal challenges in the various states, they've said, this is just forming the basis of our case that we're going to bring up to the Supreme Court. I think that for a while now, legal experts have been very skeptical that anything that has happened in these lower courts is going to be the type of thing that the Supreme Court would, have standing to take or opt to take. And I think that what we heard from Trump yesterday in his first interview since the election with Fox Business is a sort of acknowledgement of what I think a lot of other people have been thinking for a while now, which is that the idea that this is going to end in some kind of a dramatic Bush v. Gore 2000 recap is probably not very likely.
And on to our next story, the president-elect signaling a priority to black and low-income workers. This is about his picks. Who are they, and exactly what do they signal?
Well, so we have Cecilia Rouse, who's going to be picked to head the National Economic Council, and the Council of Economic Advisors. That would be a significant pick. And then Biden has also been focused on picking two other economists to that group, which is significant. It shows, in keeping with his picks for other posts, an increased reliance compared to Trump on academia for these types of positions. And it also is in line with the idea that we expect him to name Janet Yellen this week as his Treasury Secretary. She obviously was the Fed chairwoman during the Obama administration and is someone who has a very, very long background at the Fed and is very steeped in economic policy. And so I think at both Treasury and within the White House and Biden's inner circle of economic advisors, things are getting a bit wonkier than they were.
And starting today, our final story here, the president-elect and the vice president-elect are going to start getting briefed. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so going back to 1968, actually, when Nixon was elected, basically starting in almost all cases the day after the election, the president-elect and his running mate would have received the same daily intelligence briefing that the president was receiving. And that has not been happening in this case because it's not something that the president-elect is automatically entitled to. It's just been something that customarily has been afforded by the White House. This White House has not chosen to do that up until now. And so this, again, as we discussed, you know, with the Trump's comments about the Supreme Court, is yet another acknowledgement that this transition is going to go forward, even as Trump continues to, you know, put forward rhetorically the idea that the election has been stolen from him.
All right, Bloomberg's Kathleen Hunter, thanks very much. Good to talk to you. You can read more about these stories on Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg Terminal. Also, a reminder, you can follow all the latest on Bloomberg Radio in Washington. That's Bloomberg 99.1 at 105.7 FM HD2. Nathan.
Okay, John, thank you. It's coming up to 6:56 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report. It's brought to you by New Jersey Institute of Technology. NJIT makes research breakthroughs and is ranked one of the nation's most research-intensive universities by Carnegie Classification. More at njit.edu/R1. Now here's what's making news in science, technology, engineering, and math. It is Cyber Monday, the busiest online shopping day of the year, and U.S. consumers are expected to drop a record-busting $12.7 billion with a B dollars today. That would be more than 30% higher than the prior record. That is good for business, but it also raises questions about whether websites can handle the traffic. Jack Ma's Ant Group is facing a slim chance of getting its IPO done next year. Chinese officials tell Bloomberg Ant is in the early stages of reviewing changes demanded by regulators. Ant's IPO was pulled as China overhauls rules governing the fintech industry. And unions are trying to figure out how to protect members from artificial intelligence programs. A UK trade union representing more than 4.5 million British workers is forming an AI task force to lobby employers and regulators about transparency over where the technology is being deployed. The union is also seeking recourse for workers who believe they've been the target of discrimination from artificial intelligence. And that is today's Bloomberg NJIT STEM report. We're watching shares of Novavax in early market trading. They're down 4.5%. The drug maker says a large-scale COVID-19 vaccine trial in the U.S. and Mexico will no longer start by the end of November, which is today, of course, but the company does expect the study to begin in the coming weeks. Novavax says preliminary blinded data on its COVID vaccine candidate in older adults that's been needed to proceed to phase three was previously positively reviewed. Also says a 15,000 volunteer study has completely enrolled. It expects interim results as early as the first quarter. Again, Novavax shares now down 5.33% in pre-market trading. We'll have much more on this and more in Bloomberg Surveillance coming up next with Jonathan Farrow and Lisa Abramowitz. Stay tuned for that. For now, for John Tucker, I'm Nathan Hager. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak, and this is Bloomberg.